is The Rich Eisen Show.
I was stunned.
Live from The Rich Eisen Show studio in Los Angeles.
We're all paying rent in Patrick Mahomes' world. His accomplishments are second to none.
The Rich Eisen Show.
And I'm saying that in a world where Tom Brady exists. Look at what Mahomes has done in just six seasons as a starter.
Earlier on the show, ESPN NFL analyst Dan Orlovsky, 49ers reporter for The Athletic, David Lombardi. Coming up, senior writer for the MMQB, Albert Breer. And now, it's Rich Eisen.
Or not. Hi, everybody. Susie Schuster, actually. Hey, everybody. How are you? How's it going? Rich suddenly grew back a lot of hair. Hey, everybody. Susie here for you because Rich is making his way home with a plastic bag in one hand. He came home from the Super Bowl, and he looked wiped out. He walked in the door about 11:30 on Sunday night after the game. Brockman had already left.
Yeah, because we were texting him because, you know, the game obviously goes to overtime. We're like, hey, Rich, what time is your flight home?
We were laughing. We were really thinking that there's a chance that Rich will have to drive home if he misses
to rent a
flight.
Car
and we know there's
back.
A billion flights back from Vegas, but we're thinking, what if he misses his flight? He gets in. He's like, I'm so tired. The next morning, he wakes up crack of dawn, of course, to go to work. And I looked at him, and I'm like, you're not right. He's like, I'm okay. You know, it's like an airplane where, like, he never has that second cup of coffee at home, right? He never eats fish at home. I did make fish last night, but everyone's fine, okay?
Catfish?
No.
Where are we?
Meanwhile, Cooper tests positive for COVID. He goes, do I have to eat the fish? I'm like, no. He goes, let's go. I'm like, this kid is not sick. Anyway, long story short, Rich wakes up this morning at 6 and he's like, I don't feel good, but I got to go. I'm like, Rich, I'll go do the show. I'm like, I'll do the show. And sure enough, he goes down here and is throwing up during the first hour of the show. So that's what's happening behind the scenes, people.
Are we really going to share? Thank God Dan Orlovsky kind of was long-winded to start the interview because I look over and Rich is turned to the side, like just vomiting into his trash can.
Like hitting the mic on and off.
The reason why I'm sharing, some people might say oversharing is.
We're definitely oversharing
now. They like to know what happens.
Because people like to know what happens behind the scenes. And this is really what happens. Sometimes you got to go wet hair, don't care. And you got to just come down and.
Jump in and save your husband.
Jump in.
Let's do it.
You know
Let's
what I mean?
Do it.
Yeah, because I saw him. He kind of looked at me, and you had your head down when he turned. And I'm looking, and he looked up at me, and I was like, oh, and I'm snapping at you like, let's get ready to go.
Yeah, I was trying to post our first segment on Twitter, and then I look up, and he's got his head over to the side.
I'm and like, so I don't think you could tell what's going on, so I'm snapping at you like,
and
let's
I'm like,
get ready.
Okay, I got a question in my head in case, but please keep talking, Dan. Please keep talking, Dan.
Right.
Please keep talking, Dan.
And Dan gave an extensive...
Dan and luckily,
great job. Dan
luckily,
understood the assignment.
He was fantastic and had so many great things to say, and you two can go to YouTube and check it out, or this will repeat on Roku for all of you who are tuning in on Roku. It'll go on and on. Listen to Dan Orlovsky because he was great. You won't watch Rich throw up, so don't worry about that.
Now, if
you want to see something gross, you're not going to see it.
Now he can say he's literally done it all. Like, now that he's had that happen, there's nothing else he hasn't accomplished so far.
I did a football game sick once. It was at Wake Forest, and I threw up in between. But then again, you're on the sidelines. Nobody cares what you're saying anyway.
Wake Forest. So let's go Del Tufo here. Remember who was playing? Who were the coaches?
Yeah, it was Florida State, Wake Forest, I think.
Nice.
Who were the coaches? No idea.
I don't know.
Albert Breer.
Bobby Bowden and somebody.
Oh, of course it was Bobby Bowden.
Right.
Obviously.
Oh, we got 50%. You're like Del Tufo. You got a half right.
I mean, did you just compare me to Mike Del Tufo? Am I offended?
I'm not even here today.
I mean, come on.
Let's
did
be honest.
Just... Albert Breer, can
He's
you believe
favorite.
That they just brought up Mike Del Tufo and me in the same sentence? I should be offended.
Sorry.
Hi.
Sorry, Albert.
Are you back from the gym? What's happening, Albert? You've got the towel on?
And I was going to apologize to Rich because this is my the first day of off season for me. I got back late last night. And I just got off the Peloton. I'm trying to
look at you.
Stuff 10 pounds of you-know-what in a 5-pound bag today. I was going to apologize to Rich, and now I feel even worse that it's you hosting and I look like this.
I'm just happy you got your exercise in. How are you feeling recouping? What are your initial thoughts as you look back at this Super Bowl? What surprised you the most?
You know, I don't think it surprised me. I thought they were two really good teams going into it. I think, you know, the biggest takeaway I have, I made this decision after the AFC championship game that I was retiring from picking against Patrick Mahomes, and retirement's treating me well right now, I would say. It seems so inevitable, Susie. And I think, you know, even though stylistically they're different, there's just, it feels the same as it did with Brady. You know, when you hand the ball back to him at the end of the game, you're asking for it. And, you know, I think the Niners made the right decision in overtime to kick the field goal when they did. But now, you know, with the benefit of retrospect, it's like, you look at it and it's like, well, when you give Patrick Mahomes a chance to win a game in the playoffs, he's almost always going to do it. And it was just, you know, after they kicked that field goal, that feeling in your gut that it's over, you know, it was sort of the same feeling I had when the Patriots won the toss against the Falcons in Super Bowl 51. You just knew it was over, you know? And so, you know, I think we start talking about Mahomes and the same vein we have other great athletes. That doesn't mean that his, like, body of work when he's done with his career is going to be what Michael Jordan's is or what Wayne Gretzky's was or what, you know, Tom Brady's was. But he's certainly on that path, and there are the markings of that sort of career, no doubt. You know, 3 championships and 6 years as a star is pretty good.
I'm curious about what your thoughts are on some of the players for the Niners saying that they didn't know the rules for overtime. Would you have ever, if you had been Kyle Shanahan, would you have ever set up Patrick Mahomes to have an objective to know exactly what he had to do when he got the ball back?
Yeah. You know, Susie, it's interesting because I think one thing that, like, really kind of strikes me about the really great coaches, I think Andy Reid's this way, I think Bill Belichick's this way, is they really start from the ground floor with their players every year, you know? And, you know, it sort of becomes cliche that you're starting over, you're hitting reset, but it's the truth. And, you know, like, as complex as what Andy Reid does on offenses, or what as complex as what Bill Belichick does on defenses, all of their players are really masters of the simple. They're masters of the rules, you know? And I think you can even see it with Mike Vrabel's teams with the Titans, right? Like, the biggest markings of Bill Belichick and Mike Vrabel is how he uses the rules to his advantage. You know, there was that scene, I don't know if you guys remember it, but where Vrabel used the rules against Belichick to run the clock out at the end of a Titans win over the Patriots.
I remember that.
And it's simple things like that that we don't think of when we think of great coaching. But, you know, maybe it's a hurdle that Kyle Shanahan needs to clear now, you know, is that, you know, like, some of the simple stuff, when you get so tied up and everything that's complex and all the nuances of your scheme, you know, sometimes you miss the simple things like the rules. And, you know, I've always felt like, you know, Bill Belichick's teams were masters of that. Andy Reid's teams are masters of that. And as great as this San Francisco team is and as schematically sound as they've been since Kyle Shanahan's gotten there, you know, you really sort of see some of that simple stuff showing up at the end of such a big game. And, yeah, I mean, it's definitely, I think, you know, going to be a point of emphasis for Kyle Shanahan's Niners going forward. I would bet that it would be anyway.
Yeah. Hey, Albert. Just a follow up there. I so much is being debated and discussed about, was it the right move to take the ball? Should they have gone on defense first? I guess when you look at it, it's fine to take the ball first, but you absolutely have to score a touchdown. Why do you think they kicked the field goal knowing that, look, hey, now you're giving Mahomes a chance to know what he has to do, and he gets the full 4 downs each possession to do it? Like, why didn't they just go for it, you think?
Well, let's start with the first part of that, Chris, like what you said, where you said, like, taking the ball. I totally get Kyle Shanahan's logic, right?
Yeah,
like, in the thought
sense
that if we match each other, that we get the first crack in sudden death.
Right.
Like, that does make sense to me that you would think that way. But I got to tell you, like, when I was talking to Chiefs coaches in the locker room after the game, to a man, they all said they were surprised with what Kyle did. And the main reason why is exactly what you just said, which is that they made it a 4 down game for Patrick Mahomes. And so, you know, essentially when the Chiefs got the ball back, if the Niners scored, they were giving Patrick Mahomes 4 downs to churn out first downs. And they thought that was really the fatal flaw in Kyle Shanahan's strategy. And sure enough, you get in that 4th and 1, right? Like, the Chiefs might punt that. Like, because if the Chiefs are sitting there at the 30 or wherever it was, 30, 35, right? If they don't pick up that fourth down, the game's over, right? In this case, it wasn't even a decision. You had to go for it, obviously, right. You know? So I think that was sort of the biggest flaw in the logic. What was the second part of your question there, Chris?
Oh, I was just saying, like, should they have kicked it at all, or should they just have went for it? Because even if they don't get it, the Chiefs now have the ball inside the 10, maybe the 7 or 8 yard line, and then they have to go about 60 yards to get in. I mean, Bucker was making everything, so maybe 50 yards, but still.
Yeah. I don't have it offhand in front of me. Where were they? They were at the 6, I think, right? Is that right?
I'll look. Just keep going.
I think they were at the 6 or the 7. I would just say, like, I think fourth and goal from like the 6 is much more difficult than fourth and 6 from the 26, say, right?
Yeah.
And I just think in that spot, with the way that the Chiefs defense had played and the way the Chiefs defense plays in those sorts of situations,
quick, it was fourth
how
and,
good Steve Spagnuolo
was
situationally.
Fourth and 4 from the 9, Albert. Fourth and 4
from the 9,
from
the
9, yeah.
That's really tough, Chris.
But they only need to get 4 yards.
Huh?
It was fourth and 4.
Oh, it was fourth and 4 from
the
9.
Yeah, it wasn't fourth and goal. God, it was fourth and 4. Then. Yeah, fourth and 4.
Yeah. It's still a contested area. But yeah, I mean, I could see that. I guess then you're playing the percentages, right? Like, would I rather gamble that my defense can stop them from going 75 yards?
Right.
Right.
Or you run the ball. Or you run the ball on third and 4.
Can pick up 4 yards in one play.
You run the ball on third and 4. McCaffrey was great on that opening drive in overtime. Right. And then maybe it's fourth and 1. It's fourth and 2.
And you play it like a 4-down situation.
Right,
yeah,
exactly.
I got you.
Yeah.
That makes sense to me. Yeah. And I do think, like, there were definitely places in that game, Chris, where Kyle Shanahan could have leaned more into the run game. I mean, it looked like they'd run the ball well. And I know this, like, I just talking to Steve Spagnuolo after the game, one thing that they did, if you watch, and this is sort of an inside football thing, but early in the game, they were matching personnel. So when the Niners went base, the Chiefs went base. When the Niners went into 3 wide, 4 wide, the Chiefs went into nickel and dime. Mm-hmm. Steve Spagnuolo made the conscious decision there late in the first half to just leave his nickel on the field and rely on his D lineman to win up front, which I think that's part of the reason why the Niners at the end of the game were able to run the ball a little bit more. Mm-hmm. So that would be, you know, I think a point for the idea of running the ball. And then, you know, again, like how tired the Chiefs, you know, defensive front must have been by the end of the game. And Spags even said to me that they were a little worn down. And then, you know, you add how well McCaffrey ran it on that last possession. I think you certainly say the right thing to do would have been to play that like a 4-down situation.
Yeah, especially when Kyle decided midway through or early third quarter to go for it on 4th and 3 at the Chiefs 15.
Right.
You know, if he
actually like flat out said after the game, like maybe he wouldn't have done that if it wasn't Mahomes on the other side, right?
Right. So you follow that line of thinking when you take it to overtime, knowing that it's going to take a touchdown to beat these guys in overtime.
Yeah.
I just thought maybe go for it again. And if you don't get it, force them to go. Yeah.
Hey, Chris, how about we simplify this? Don't give the ball back to Patrick Mahomes.
Exactly. Yeah. Don't give the ball back to him. Like, you know, he's on the other sideline. Anyway.
I mean, that's what it felt like, Albert Breer. It really felt like the old days when we would watch Brady get the ball back. And we saw it, obviously, in regulation. But in the old days, we'd be like, oh, you idiots. You're giving the ball back to Tom with
it's
a
over.
Minute and a half.
Right.
I mean, like, what are you thinking? And that's why they should have Dan Campbell'd it and, like, you know, go for the touchdown, like go for it rather than kick, because then you're at least putting yourself in a position to succeed. It's almost like the old time, like cartoons where, like, you know, they set it up and then the door's open.
Well, if you want to take it to another level, I think we would have all understood Dan Campbell's decision-making a lot more in the NFC Championship game if it was Patrick Mahomes on the other side, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So I do think, and that's honestly, like, Susie, why I think that's the flaw in analytics. There are so many elemental things that go into this, right? There are so many little pieces. Like, I made this argument with Rich a couple of weeks ago. Like, it's an art and science thing to me, right? Like, there's the science, which is the numbers, and then there's the art of it, which is understanding everything. How's your defensive line feeling? How's your offensive line feeling? How's your quarterback playing? How's the other team's quarterback playing? All of those things. Well, how's the weather? You know, like, what do you see when you look in your quarterback's eyes? I'm like, all of those little things go into these decisions. And I certainly think, like, you know, you, given the situation, given the history, given who Patrick Mahomes is and has been, you know, like, he's Brady in that way. Like, when everything's going like this, like, everything's shaky and moving up and down, he's like that, right? That's the guy you don't give the ball back to.
Albert Breer joining us here on the Rich Eisen Show. Susie Schuster in for Rich Eisen. What about Chris Jones? What's going to happen with him as we look ahead?
I get the feeling, just having talked to him the last few weeks, that he wants to be back in Kansas City next year. Now, how possible is that? I don't know. I mean, he's got like a freeway to the free agent market now if he wants to take it. So he will be a free agent if he, you know, wants to be one. And, you know, the Chiefs, obviously the numbers on Patrick Mahomes and his contract are what they are. And the Chiefs are going to have to pay some of these guys coming up. You know, Legarius needs a free agent too. What do they do about him? They've got this great crop of second year players. All those guys are going to be eligible for new contracts after next year. You know, what do you do about Travis Kelce? Do you feel like you need to add another weapon to the offense? Because maybe Travis Kelce is a year closer to being a more ordinary player, not the superhero that he's been for the last decade or so. So these are all things that you really have to think about, Susie. And, you know, I think you sit down with Chris Jones and you say, we want you to finish your career as a Chief, and we want to do something that's going to work for everybody. And I just think the problem with that is you had time to pay him. And the way most players would approach that is, well, I just took on 2 years of additional injury risk, my contract year, and then, you know, the year my contract year and you know, like, what was it? No, he wasn't on the tag last year. I'm trying to think now. No, he wasn't on the tag. So you took on the extra year of injury risk, you know, coming into this year without a new contract. And they're going to say, well, you know, you should have come to me with this a year ago. And things did get a little more contentious last year. So, you know, I think it's going to have to be sitting down and leveling with the guy and trying to find a way to get something done. I know this, the way he and his agent played this worked out perfectly. He winds up hitting almost all of his incentives. He's still a great player. And he's still enormously, enormously valuable to that defense. That defense isn't the same without Chris Jones. So he certainly has leverage here, and it'll be interesting to see how he chooses to use it, because he was certainly willing to use leverage last year.
No doubt. Will this Super Bowl put to rest the arguments about Brock Purdy and his worthiness?
For some people, no, because he lost the game. For me, yes. I mean, if we're talking about, is he a top 10, 15 starting quarterback in the league, I think that's settled. If we're talking about, is he worth $55 or $60 million a year, that might be a little bit of a different argument. But let me ask you this, Susie. Would you look at him differently if he was drafted 20th overall?
I think 100%. The whole thing is that people don't like people who come in last place. Actually, Albert, it's what I talked about last week on What the Football, yeah, because I'd spent a lot of time on the phone with Kurt Warner the night before. And we were saying the exact same thing in this conversation, that people loved Kurt because he was not drafted. And because he was the underdog, go see the movie. But people don't like the fact that he came in last. And it was, as we look at the Brady draft and where he was drafted, it was a low draft pick, but it wasn't dead last. And I honestly think that people don't like what they consider to be losers because he came in last. What do you think?
I think it takes forever for these guys to live down their draft position. I mean, people still looked at, and this is easy to forget, people still looked at Tom Brady as a game manager. And what, Chris, you can help me out on this one. You're a Patriots fan. It was what, 14, 15, right? Or 05, 04, 05, somewhere there.
Yeah, for sure. Nobody looked at Brady differently until 07. And he had already had three Super Bowls and was basically a Hall of Famer.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Like, Susie, you followed it, right? Like, 04, 05, like, there were still a lot of questions. Like, oh, well, he's great, but he's not Peyton Manning.
Yeah.
Well, why were people saying that? People were saying that because Brady was a sixth-round pick and Peyton Manning was the number one overall pick, you know?
All of New England went into mourning when Drew Bledsoe got hurt. I mean, you would have thought that the world had ended, something collided into Foxborough.
Yeah, I mean, and that's, and I... I think, like, if you watch Brock Purdy play, if you actually just watch him and you compare him against other quarterbacks in their second year, right? Like, I certainly think in the Super Bowl, he was as good as Jalen Hurts was a year ago. And we were all talking about how great Jalen Hurts was, right? Now, they're different stylistically, but I mean, the other big difference between the two of them is one was a second round pick and the other one was a seventh round pick, you know? And I just think we hold on to those things for so long. It's the reverse of why we look at former first round picks who wash out and we keep saying, well, are we sure there's not there? It's why those guys keep getting second chances. You know what I mean? It's why if you're the 10th pick in the draft and you flame out somewhere in your fourth year and your fifth year, someone else is going to try to mine your talent, right? It's the reverse of that. It's people don't want to accept like what you are as a player because people were wrong about you when you were drafted. That conversation I had with Spagnuolo after the game, Susie, on his own, he said, Brock Purdy is really good. When he was referencing why he changed what he was doing in the middle of the game, and they came off of playing so much zone and they went almost exclusively to playing man coverage. He was like, Purdy was identifying what we were doing and ripping apart our zones. And say we could not stay in that defense because of who Brock Purdy was as a player. So we had to put more in our corners and play more man defense, and, you know, it wound up working out for them, but they were adjusting to what Purdy was doing, mm-hmm. you know, not the other way around. And so, yeah, I mean, I can still remember this summer, and this summer I had a conversation with a close friend of Kyle Shanahan's who coaches for another team now. And he was like, you know how much Kyle loves Purdy, loves Brock, right? And I was like, yeah, no, he's like, no, you realize how much he loves him. I said, well, what do you mean? He goes, I can tell by the way he's calling plays for him, how much he loves him. And then I asked Kyle about that a few days later. He was like, yeah, definitely. I call plays differently for him. So it's not people in the sport that are saying these things. It's people on the outside who like to simplify these things too much. And I think that's why there's a lot of people who woke up Monday morning saying, well, one team has Patrick Mahomes and one team has Brock Purdy. And it's true that Brock Purdy is not Patrick Mahomes. But these aren't all black and white arguments, you know? We're talking about the best player in the sport. That doesn't, because he lost to the best player in the sport, doesn't mean Brock Purdy can't be the fifth or eighth or 10th best quarterback in the league. It's not that, it's not black and white, yes or no. There are shades of gray here. And I think Brock Purdy has a chance to be a damn good quarterback based on everything that I know.
But Albert Breer, do you
and
think
And already
that,
is one, actually. Already is one.
Do you think that Shanahan then called plays to make Brock Purdy look good with his arm rather than run the ball maybe more efficiently in the game?
I think Steve Spagnuolo has a way of influencing teams to abandon the run. With his run blitzes, with his fronts, with different looks he gives you. I think if you look at the Baltimore game, he did the same thing, and that's the most run-heavy team in the league, right? I think Baltimore, and again, you have to look this up. I feel like I'm totally unprepared. I keep telling you guys to look things up. I think Baltimore ran the ball, 16, 18 times in that game? That's so unlike the Ravens. And it's not like that was a blowout. Like, that was, at worst, a 10-point game. I think the biggest deficit the Ravens were in that game was 10 points. And yet, like a Ravens team that relies on Lamar Jackson in that running game, I think had half the amount of rushing attempts that they had the week before against Houston. Well, what changed? Were we saying that, you know, John Harbaugh and Todd Monken abandoned the run? I didn't hear it as loud. I think it's more about the genius of Steve Spagnuolo and what he's able to do to influence you to do something you don't want to do. And, you know, I think more than anything else, it's Kyle probably trying to take what the Chiefs were giving him. And, you know, if you look at it again, lots of nickel fronts in the second half and lots of man coverage and lots of corners on islands. And, you know, at least on paper, what an offensive coach is going to do in that situation is throw the ball. So I think in a lot of ways, the way Spagnuolo played it in running run blitzes, in playing nickel fronts, in putting his corners on islands, was influencing Kyle to throw the ball. And obviously Kyle and the Niners did throw the ball in those situations.
Albert, before we let you go, what should the Bears do at quarterback as we look ahead now to the combine ahead and then the draft?
I think what they probably should do is what they probably will do, which is trade Justin Fields and go and get Caleb Williams. I think Justin's a good quarterback. I think you have to do things to accommodate him. And I think a lot of it is how fast he sees it, you know? And that means you have to play a little bit of a different brand of football to accommodate him. He's an incredible athlete. He is really, really smart. He's a good leader. He's tough. He's got all these traits. He's got a big arm. You know, he does have natural accuracy. But that question that was there when he was coming out is lingering now. It's like, how fast does he see the field? And that's why you see him holding the ball in a lot of these situations. And so I think there's a limit with how far he can go. And there are accommodations you have to make for him. I think Caleb Williams, if he is what a lot of people think he is, you have to take him. I've heard scouts, you know, say to me, like that Trevor Lawrence, Andrew Luck, Peyton Manning, John Elway tier of prospect doesn't mean he's going to become that, but that tier of prospect, Caleb Williams is on that tier. And, you know, I've talked to Cliff Kingsbury about it, who's coached both guys, who said the similarities between the two are eerie. There's a lot that ties the two together. Now you do have to investigate all the stuff about who he is as a person and his personality and all of that different stuff. But everybody in the USC program seems to love him. And you get to hit reset on that rookie contract for your quarterback clock. You add all of it up, and this seems like it's a relatively academic decision for the Bears. You know, you go and you see what you can get for Justin Fields. You hold on to the number one pick. And then at the end of April, you draft Caleb Williams there.
Right. We know that Tomlin likes Fields. We know that already. But what do you think are the landing spots for him?
I think like the landing spots for him are probably sitting there right in the middle of the first round. Right. So it's the teams that need quarterbacks that might not quite be in the range to get one and maybe don't have the appetite for giving up the amount of draft picks it would take to go and get one in the top three. And I think right now the Bears, the Commanders, and the Patriots can get a ransom for those three picks. You know, Caleb Williams, Drake May, Jaden Daniels, Caleb one, Drake May, Jaden Daniels, in whatever order you have them. I think after that, like from most of the people I've talked to, depending on what you think of JJ McCarthy, there's a drop off. And so I think for Justin, it probably be his sweet spot, probably be one of those teams that are picking right there in the middle of the first round. And that might be just out of range for going and getting one. So I think Vegas is a little bit higher than that, but they're sort of in that range. I don't know if they'd go and get him because they have his old offensive coordinator from Chicago, Luke Getsy. Atlanta's one that at least on paper makes some sense naturally. I do like Pittsburgh. You know, Arthur Smith's very creative in what he does with his quarterbacks. And I think the way you look at it, Susie, it's sort of like Baker Mayfield last year, right? Like Baker Mayfield in a certain way washed out of Cleveland because of circumstances. I think Justin Fields is washing out of Chicago because of circumstances, because his team wasn't the worst team in the league, but because of a trade happens to have the number one overall pick. And at least for next year, he's relatively cheap. So I think he could be a good get for somebody sitting there in the middle of the first round. I'm not saying they're going to trade their first rounder for him. I think he probably takes some combination of a day two pick and a day three pick. But those teams that are sitting in the middle of the first round that might not be in position to get one of the top three could go and get them.
Albert, thank you for your time. Don't forget to stretch. Go hit the showers. We really appreciate it.
All right. Thanks, guys. I'll try to bring my research with me next time. Sorry about
cold
the
plunge. Hey, cold plunge.
Don't be ridiculous. Unprepared. I mean, I got wet hair back
here. I just turned Brockman into my own research department.
We're all jumping in. And by the way, like, he doesn't do anything anyway. So Albert, like, make him do something
you.
During the show.
I'm going to send you an invoice, buddy.
All right,
by the way,
I appreciate it.
It's a big fat invoice, too. He owes me for the weekend.
See you, pal.
All right, have a great day, guys.
Thanks again. Hey, say hi to your mother for me.
Hey, say hi to your mother.
Yeah.
Peloton. Look at him.
Like I say,
Peloton.
Though,
how about that? Home gym for home Albert Breer. Yeah. SI is treating him well.
Came in towel around his neck like Balboa. I was like, let's go. You know?
He's killing it.
Fantastic, fantastic.
One thing I got to disagree with Albert about, though, he said Purdy played as well as Jalen Hurts in last year's Super Bowl. Got to push back on that a little bit. Jalen Hurts was incredible last year. Four total touchdowns, 300 yards passing. Didn't win the game. But
you're not wrong.
Yeah.
And at the same time, what quarterback in recent NFL history has gone into a Super Bowl with so many people doubting his ability? I mean, can you think of somebody lately, sure. Chris?
No.
Where people are so,
no.
I mean, the game manager, which, by the way, I think last time I checked, what's wrong with managing a game? Yeah. Isn't that kind of what you should do as the quarterback?
And I think we got to get rid of that term because it means, because there's no solid, there's no definitive definition of what that means. You ask five people, they're going to give you five different answers. So it's kind of a stupid thing now to even argue about.
And I know we got to get to break, but Brock Purdy, maybe the most polarizing quarterback we've had in quite some time. So it was nice to see him play well, just not well enough.
Yeah, good thing we have another 30 minutes to discuss it. Hey, see you on the other side of the break. This is The Rich Eisen Show. Susie Schuster in for Rich Eisen.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly. You need parts? O'Reilly Auto Parts has parts. Need them fast? We've got fast. No matter what you need, we have thousands of professional parts people doing their part to make sure you have it. Product availability. Just one part that makes O'Reilly stand apart. The professional parts people.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Let's talk about DoorDash, people. We are a huge DoorDash family in my household. As a matter of fact, my wife loves DoorDash so much, she almost named one of our kids Door and the other one Dash. I'm serious. We get everything DoorDash to the house. Kind of like what we saw during the big game, right? DoorDash went all out for game day and DoorDash stuff from all the ads to one lucky winner. Cars, snacks, even tax software. What a football game that was, for sure. It was one heck of a delivery for the winning team. And whatever watch party or anything party you've got coming up, get it delivered to DoorDash. You're going to love it. We sure do in my house. Football season may be over, but we are still in the thick of basketball games, the school year, and let's face it, winter. I can think of a million reasons daily to order DoorDash. So hop on the app and make your day a little easier. Get dinner for tonight, groceries for the week, or a consolation prize for your sad friends in San Francisco. All on DoorDash. DoorDash, your door to more. Head to the DoorDash app to get everything you need delivered.
What is your best sports memorabilia that you have that you're most proud of or something that you love?
Oh, it's I've got a bunch of things that I love, but the one that I would have to say is the coolest, simply because it's not, because I was a baseball player, so baseball stuff means a lot to me. One year, a girlfriend of mine said, if you could have anything for Christmas this year, what would it be? Mm-hmm. And I said, an autographed baseball glove from Brooks Robinson. Because Brooks was from Arkansas. He grew up in Little Rock, North Little Rock. And I just loved him, you know, when he played with the Orioles. And so I thought, that's never going to happen. But if I could have anything, that's what it would be. And she chased him down. She got all the publicists and everybody else on the case. And Christmas morning, I opened it up, and there was an autographed book, Brooks Robinson glove, and it said... and of course, you know, the glove from him, that's the thing, because sure. of his fielding, you know, and it said, from a huge fan, Brooks Robinson. I'm like, Brooks Robinson knows who I am? I'm done. This is all fine.
Did you ever put on the Brooks Robinson glove? Like, literally put your hand in?
Oh, I put it on, but boy, do I protect it. I finally put it in plexiglass, because it's, you know, the name might rub off, you know.
Yeah, you don't want to deal with that.
Boy, that's a real dandy thing. McGuire also gave me a bat right after he broke it, you know.
Right after he broke the Maris?
No, after he broke his bat.
Oh, after.
He grounded out to third. But
no, you should say it was home run number 67, home run 62.
But it was that year.
Okay.
It was that year, and he grounded out to third against the Dodgers, and he gave me the bat and his batting glove, which had dirt all over it and everything, so I've got that. And I got some good stuff over the years.
Welcome back to the Rich Eisen Show Radio Network. I'm sitting at the Rich Eisen Show desk, furnished by Grainger, with supplies and solutions for every industry. Grainger's got the right product for you. Call clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Hi, everybody. Susie Schuster in for Rich, who went home early is what we're going to call this. He He's going to take a couple of days on the IR, I think. I think I'll be back with you tomorrow. I think we'll have somebody else in on Thursday and Friday, unless I just strong somebody, lock him in the basement, maybe a little bit more food poisoning for somebody.
What you got to do the rest of
the week? Hey, man, I was bored. Short-term I had a IR. Lot of things to say, and I couldn't just wait for What the Football, which I am taping right after this show with Amy Trask.
You gotta get your
with the
out?
Great Jim Nantz, by the way. The Hello, great Jim friends. Nantz will be our guest today, because I said to Rich yesterday, maybe I'll just try Jim Nantz. He's like, good luck.
And then Nantz hit you right back?
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Of course. Because
nobody says no to her.
That's amazing.
Dude, I was a booker coming out of college. Look like I hate it when people say no. And I learned from the great Barbara Walters, who made all of her own bookings herself.
Let me just pick up
herself.
That name real quick.
Listen, so Barbara Wawa told
Barbara
me,
Wawa.
If you want something done, do it yourself. And so I did.
Wow.
So I hit up Jim Nantz. I've got the calling. Amy Trask rescued me because I left my bottle of wine at home.
Hey.
So Amy Trask, of course, sourced another bottle that we can crack open with the great Jim Nantz.
Wait,
we
you're
going to
drink
that.
Wine this afternoon?
Yeah, what's your problem? Why not?
I might have to just stay after.
By the way, this bottle of wine is wicked awesome. It is fantastic. And by the way, yeah, I don't just drink with you. You know, Jamokes, hey, I drink on the show with Amy Trask.
The Feller's still
yeah,
here.
Are we I'll mimosa be in the up tomorrow?
You want a mimosa?
Oh, yeah,
I'll mimosa up with you.
I haven't had a mimosa in 24 yet.
It Rich already has a headache. Why not make it worse,
it
right?
It is Valentine's Day tomorrow.
Oh, and I'm spending it with my guy.
Hey!
I like this. I mean, Jim Nantz today. You guys tomorrow, people are going to talk. 844-204 Rich, guys, you got time to call in and unload your thoughts on the Super Bowl, because you know that I like taking calls. So with that in mind, Chris in Virginia did not like the Super Bowl. Why? Taylor was only on for 54 seconds. So why didn't you like it?
There was no tempo to it. Actually, it was penalties. This side, offside, really didn't get rolling until what third quarter. But
that's true.
I've seen better. I've seen better. So, and second, I wanted to let you know that you are definitely, it should have best wife in front there.
Oh, yeah,
ever.
She's got her own sign somewhere.
You know, Chris, it's so funny. He sent me a text. He's like, come down early. And then radio silence. So I texted Brockman. I'm like, is he okay? He's like, yeah, not so much.
No. I was like, yeah, definitely not.
I drove like one of those like old fashioned Chris. Like it was like we're in Los Angeles, so you've seen so many movies that are shot on the 405. Mm-hmm. I did some beautiful driving to get down here. I just want you to know that. So Chris, this whole best dad ever.
Yeah,
it is Valentine's Day. I don't know where the sign is.
It's got to be down there
Where's
somewhere.
Where's the sign?
Probably look in the drawer there.
I know. Chris,
wait, Chris, be positive. What did you like about the Super Bowl?
Oh, boy. That's a tough one here. Trying to explain the neons to people who haven't seen football before, how so many it didn't have that pattern. And sometimes I think maybe the extra week brings that on. Playing some ball, I like to play week to week. I don't know if that adds to it, but it's good to look that up and check that out. I think maybe more competitive ball. I know guys have injuries. The extra week is helpful. But, as I say, I've seen better. I've seen better. But thank you very much, guys. You keep me through. Just got through heart surgery. And I love the show, and I hope Rich feels better. And Susie, hey, is there any more out there like you?
Chris, are you shopping? Is that what you're trying to tell me the day before Valentine's Day? Hey, Chris, thank you for calling in, and we're so glad that we can be with you as you recover from heart surgery.
Stay
we're
healthy,
thinking
Chris.
About you. Be healthy.
Thank you very much, guys.
Be like Albert Breer. Get on a bike. Come on, we need to keep you healthy so you can keep listening to the show, Chris. Thanks again. I really appreciate your call in.
I understand what Chris is saying. It was a very slow game. Look, 0-0 first quarter. Missed chances by both teams, turnovers.
First half was not great.
And then it kind of got going, midway through the third quarter. It kind of ramped up. I mean, it was 10-3, 10-6 there for a while. And then you're like, okay, Chiefs get a turnover, punch it in. And then it kind of went back and forth all the way through overtime. So it definitely was slow starting.
Right, it was. But by the fourth quarter, we were like, we don't want this game to end.
No, yeah. And
by the fourth quarter, we all were in the same room and we were psyched.
Yeah,
and then by overtime, we're like, can we have two? this is fantastic. And I literally looked at my friend Jeff and said, I don't want this game to ever end.
I was kind of nervous. My heart was kind of pumping, and I'm not a fan of either team. I didn't really care who won. But man, I was like, whew, I was kind of anxious for
you
both
love the
sides.
Game, baby. That's
yeah,
what
the
it is.
Game was just like so exciting. I wanted it to keep going.
I remember you saying specifically, I don't have a horse in this race, and my heart is thumping.
Yeah, my heart is thumping. Yeah. It was just like so tense. You know, both sides, tense moments, fourth downs, guys going for it, big time moments. That's kind of what you want in the Super Bowl final game of the year. Two great teams, a lot of great players on the field. Legacies, dynasties at stake. So, yeah, it kind of lived up to it. Kind of forgot about the slow start, and it was all about the finish.
It was all about the artichoke dip. It's really what it was. I mean, Sarah's great. Yeah, Sarah Tiana is killing it in the kitchen, by the way.
Yeah, her food game is top notch.
We had a little taste test at the house, right? We did three different pizzerias.
We had a lot going on. I was still kind of feeling the...
Was it heartburn, or were you nervous about the game?
It was a little bit. I think it was a combination of the both.
Right.
And then I had to sweat it out at the gym yesterday. I'm like, Albert, I got to get back on the bike.
You got to go back on the bike. You guys, I mean, all of you in Vegas were just, I think you were enjoying the nightlife a little bit and perhaps saw the early morning hours in Las Vegas.
Not a lot of sleep.
No.
A lot of time at the tables.
Let's take a break. Let's take a break and then let's review exactly what Chris Brockman did in Las Vegas. Inquiring minds want to know. Let's take a break. When we come back, more calls. This is The Rich Eisen Show.
America starts the day with America in the Morning. Hi, I'm John Trout, your host for the latest news, politics, entertainment, business, and weather. Our staff of correspondents provide a fast-paced look at the world with specialized reports from where news happens.
In New York, I'm Sue Aller.
I'm Charles Tillotesma.
Sagar Meghani, Washington.
I'm Jennifer King.
I'm Clayton Neville.
I'm Kevin Carr.
I'm Archie Zaraletta.
Concise, accurate, and fresh each day.
America in the Morning, the podcast, available wherever you listen.
On the Bigger Pockets Real Estate Podcast, co-hosts David Green and Rob Abasolo interview real estate investors and entrepreneurs about successes, failures, and hard-earned lessons. Joined by author Dave Meyer.
Who wrote a book?
I did write a book.
It seems like you're coming out with a book every 4 minutes.
You're one to talk. You've released 2 books this year. I've done half as many as you.
It is more about strategy than it is about just finding whatever the new buzzword happens to be.
Bigger Pockets Real Estate Podcast on YouTube or wherever you listen.
Well, I mean, and that's why I'm wondering why you would go by the name of Matty Ice, Matt. That's why that's a beer-infused nickname, and it doesn't fit anymore. So. Would you agree it doesn't fit anymore, Matt?
Is the Mattrel coming back, or are we making a push for the Mattrel here?
No, I'm pointing out that certain nickname that you've had for a long time.
I like beer. I do like beer.
Right. So when it comes to it, though, you're not slamming them back, right? Is what you're saying?
No, I guess I'm drinking responsibly.
Okay. Something that would be a natural light of some sort, Matt? What are you drinking?
It's been a long time.
See? You keep making my point. Why won't you take the Mattrel from me, Matt? Why won't you do it? I mean, how many times do I have to ask?
It's just nobody else wants it.
Are you aware I offered it to Stafford, your buddy?
That right?
Yes.
He didn't take it either.
Well, I mean, he...
That's a no, Matt.
Hold on a minute. Excuse me. Hold on. I gave him full disclosure that it was a retread and that you had rejected it. Because I know you guys talk. I know you guys are tight, right?
He forgot to mention it to me the last time I saw him.
I can't believe that wasn't top of mind for him. Okay, so just on behalf of all my loved ones who are cringing right now, just tell me to move on, Matt, and I'll move on. Just tell me to move on.
Rich, you got to move on. You got to move on. I love you, but you got to move on.
Thank you, Matt. Thank you so much.
Even if I gave you a T-shirt or anything? All right, Matt, I can take a hint after 9 years or so.
And we're back to wrap up this edition of the Rich Eisen Show. Susie Schuster, late edition in for Rich. Last call for phone calls, because you know I love to take those calls. Let's go right away to Jeremiah. Jeremiah, you are in Washington, and you're a Chiefs fan. Tell me about what you loved about this game, besides the fact that, I don't know, you have a destiny, right? A dynasty right here.
Oh, it was awesome. I tell you what, being in Washington and a Kansas City Chiefs fan, I hear all the Seattle people all day long. But other than that, it was a phenomenal Super Bowl. I don't know what else to say. I mean, dynasty, you know, it's great.
Destiny, dynasty, same thing. I mean, look, you guys are set up to win here. Do you think it's a three-peat? What do you think?
Oh, definitely, as long as we keep everybody. I was telling the other guy, I was like, you know, while I was watching the game, Rashid Rice is wide open in the fourth quarter, right over the middle. And that would have been the game right there. There was so many times where we could have ended the game. And it was just like, being a Chiefs fan, your heart's like just pounding in your chest. But it was awesome. It was awesome. And, well, and I also called in because a first time caller. I've never called in before.
Hey, thanks for calling in.
Yeah. And you know, I feel you guys have so much more fun when you're at the desk.
Not easy there.
So, I mean, you know, it's awesome. I just see like a different genre when you're there.
I really, really appreciate it. That's so nice of you to call in. Call in more often. We'd love to hear from you.
All right. Thanks a lot. Oh, hey, real quick. Can I ask TJ something?
Yes, of course.
Do it. What up, Jay?
TJ, what is up with Davian holding on to that suitcase, man? When is he going to turn it in?
Bro, right? Like, there's been so many times where I'm like, this guy's got to cash this in. But here's the bottom line.
He's almost lost his credibility.
For the radio listeners, we're talking about WWE. Damian Priest holds a money in the bank, which you see right above my head here, which means the person who holds this in wrestling can cash it in for a world title match whenever they want. And the thing is, they can't allow this man not to have a successful cash in, or it's just going to ruin. It's like, what's the point?
I mean, it's been for me, being a big WWE fan also. Oh man, it's almost like a sore wound. It's like, what again?
Right. You know? But the thing is, it's very exciting. They're at an exciting time right now. You know, we had Seth Rollins on, The Rock is back, Roman, Cody. You know, what is Priest going to do? I'm really looking forward to all this leading up to WrestleMania, man. It's a good time.
Absolutely. But hey, I just want to say, go Chiefs. I love it, man. And I hope you guys, I can't wait for the next season to come. You know,
of course.
Well, it's already started. Yeah, we've got absolutely a new season right ahead of us. Jeremiah, thanks again for your call.
Thanks, brother.
Thanks, Susan.
Yeah, well, guys, and we're going to be talking about the three-peat all offseason and all throughout next season. So I went on the Pro Football Reference, and I looked at all the teams that went back-to-back, what they did the following year in their attempt for a three-peat. I looked at it. Here it is, guys. The 68 Packers went 6-7-1, missed the playoffs. 74 Dolphins went 11-3, lost in the divisional round. 76 Steelers went 10-4, lost in the conference championship game. The 80 Steelers, 9-7, missed the playoffs. The 1999ers went 14-2. They were unbelievable that year. Lost to the Giants, remember, in the conference championship game that led to wide right. Sorry, Mike. 94 Cowboys, sorry, TJ, 12-4, lost to the 49ers, who then blasted the Chargers in the Super Bowl conference championship. 99 Broncos went 6-10. That was the worst of the bunch, missed the playoffs. And the 05 Patriots went 10-6 and lost in the divisional round.
Well, speaking of the Patriots, Josh in Kansas doesn't think that his Chiefs are going to win as much as the Patriots did. Oh. So why do you think so?
Well, first off, Susie, I'm a Raiders fan.
That's why.
Shout out to you, Susie, TJ, and Chris.
What up, Josh?
I just want to make the point that the league is so competitive. Another thing, TJ, you might agree with me on this. There is so many comparisons, I just thought about it, with the Chiefs and the Cowboys. If you look at it, both going into that seventh season, I just don't think they're going to do it. I think number 12 is going to stay scot-free. I think the script is over. I think the Raiders are coming to play, and I think the whole AFC West is coming to play, the whole NFL. Sorry, I just...
Who's your quarterback for the Raiders next year, there, buddy?
Oh, man, you know what? Aiden ain't the guy, but I hope it's either McCarthy. I've seen something about McCarthy. I'd take Fields, man. I honestly think our head coach is amazing, bro. That culture's back. We're ready. I hope. I'm praying.
God, when I think of J.J. McCarthy, I just don't – it's so funny. He just seems so not Raiders culture. Do you know what I mean? He's so shiny and squeaky clean and all that. And I think of the Raiders, and I think of like a mean, gritty
– Carr was as well,
maybe that's
though, right?
why Garoppolo didn't work, huh?
Carr was the same, though, right?
Yeah.
Michigan,
no.
though, Harbaugh's back. Man, AFC West is going to be competitive. There ain't this whole thing over and over with the Chiefs. You know, I think you guys are all awesome. I appreciate all of you guys. I hope Rich gets to feeling better. And I'm out for this time. I'd like to call more often.
Do it.
This is just my first call.
Yeah, oh, Josh, who's stopping you? Next time I'll say Josh, the Raiders fan, and I'll get it right. So
oh,
fantastic.
Hey, yo, and TJ.
Yeah, my man.
Hey, one's up. Roman's retaining.
Acknowledge me.
One's up.
He's definitely retaining.
Roman Reigns, come on.
Come on, yeah, let's go. He's going to break Hulk Hogan's record. Then after that, all bets are off. But yeah, I agree with you, Josh.
Hey, Josh, thanks again for your time. TJ,
thank
have you
guys.
Seen the script for the next season? Do you know what's going to happen?
Well, it's not finalized yet.
No, okay.
But
rewrites?
Like I said, man, I had it all year. And, when it played out, it was pretty – there was a few things that were a little off, but – it was pretty much on
what an amazing
point.
Bit that just that we kept going. That was so funny.
I mean, Table Reed coming up for the next season.
Great. I love it.
You know, and people think it wasn't real. It's a real script. It is a real script.
It is a script.
But also, I want to say this because, you know, Susie, there's a thing on social media where they say girls say, like, what's your Roman Empire? What's the thing that you constantly think of all the time? And I never thought I had one until just now. 1994. If Jerry and Jimmy don't have their blow up and Jimmy Johnson doesn't get fired, the Cowboys are going to win 4 Super Bowls in a row. And I'm going to take that to the grave. There's no way anyone could tell me that they would. If Dion gets called for the holding on Irv, we beat the Chargers and, you know, 4 Super Bowls in a row. I can't stop thinking about
what
it.
What is in your coffee cup?
Oh, hey, Susie, great job filling in. Let's do it again tomorrow.
Thanks,
we're
going to
be back here tomorrow, kids. See you in the morning.
The Rolling Stone Music Now podcast gets inside the biggest stories with Rolling Stone senior writer Brian Hyatt.
And here's Lil Yachty with Tierra Whack.
I've never been to a fashion show. I never did any Paris Fashion Week, New York Fashion Week, and I'll tell you why. Because I would always go to events and people would say to me, oh man, Yachty, man, I love your music, bro. And I should be like, what song? At the time, I didn't love my music. I would feel like I'm in a room with all these artists and they all respect each other. And I feel like no one respects me.
Rolling Stone Music Now, wherever you listen.